Thank you for inviting me. The invitation made this trip possible for me. I come to you from NCBI, and where I work with Eugene Kuhn, who gave a talk this morning, which is a biological introduction to the arms race between viruses and their hosts. And here I will focus on one such mechanism of a virus-host interaction, namely the recently discovered adaptive immunity in prokaryotes called CRISPR. For those who of you who missed the morning talk, I will briefly explain what this system does. The CRISPR stands for clusters of regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, the way it works is there's this locus of palindromic repeats which sandwich nucleotide sequences of about 40 to 80 nucleotides long, and associated proteins called Cas, CRISPR-associated proteins. And what this locus does is, when it's activated, is it transcribes this CRISPR cassette, chops it up along the repeats, and then these little bits of RNA form a complex with one of the proteins. And when and this complex can recognize DNA that matches these little pieces of RNA and cleave it. So in effect, this, when this locus is activated, it it identifies and destroys in DNA that matches these spacers, so-called spacers. And the beautiful thing about this CRISPR locus is that the spacers come from previous viral infections. So if there's a viral infection that somehow the cell survives using some other immunity, if it doesn't already have immunity to it, then other proteins from this CRISPR-associated protein locus go and they search this invading virus for a certain motif, and when they find it, they chop up a little bit of the sequence and insert it into the CRISPR array. So that way, the CRISPR array encodes the history of failed viral infections. So when in the future, the same virus that has a matching piece of DNA invades, the CRISPR array gets activated, and I'm not sure how it does gets activated, but when it does, the matching spacer that matches the viral protospacer, so this is a terminology, that when the bit of sequence is in a virus, it's called protospacer. When it's in the CRISPR array, it's called a spacer. When the spacer matches the protospacer, the virus is cleaved and is no longer active. So this is an adaptive immunity, which is constitutes also Lamarckian evolution, because the whole CRISPR array is vertically inherited. It's clear that CRISPR provides certain benefits to the prokaryotes that carry it. It's you know, a bit surprising that it's not ubiquitous. Although it's pretty widespread, it's not ubiquitous. And here is some data from our recent paper in MBio, which shows which models the system. But among that, there's some analysis of CRISPR prevalence in a small group of bacteria and archaea, and it's clear that even though the superkingdom, whether it's bacteria or archaea, or temperature, have some information content in determining whether there's CRISPR or not, there's a strong element of stochasticity, although the temperature is a better correlate with the prevalence of CRISPR. It's clear that because it's not ubiquitous, there must be, in addition to the benefit that CRISPR provides in protecting the prokaryotes from viruses, there's a fitness cost. And the cost comes from several sources. For example, you could think of CRISPR blocking, since CRISPR blocks all external foreign DNA, can also block beneficial gene transfers. Occasionally, it is found that the CRISPR cassette has bits of the prokaryote's own DNA. So when CRISPR is activated, the cell essentially commits suicide by destroying its own DNA. And also in prokaryotes, where genomic real estate is at a premium, carrying around extra 50 to 100 genes is an expense in itself. So since it has a clear benefit and has a cost, whether a particular species has it or does not have it, it depends on some specific condition of which pits the benefit against the cost, and we would like to understand under which conditions the benefit outweighs the cost. And the way to do it is, of course, to model it. And because, as we saw, there's a strong element of stochasticity, it will have to be a stochastic population model of virus host coevolution with explicit CRISPR dynamics. The model we had here did not have population dynamics. It had fixed populations. And the model I'll be talking to you about today transcends that limitation and has explicit CRISPR dynamics and explicit population dynamics. Because I'm a physicist, I like to distill models to the minimal set, or as what seems like the minimal set of ingredients that still keep the essential physics of the phenomenon while discarding everything else. So in this model, the viruses are represented by a fixed number of protospacers. And protospacers are just integers. And they all have to be distinct in each virus. And they're NV viruses. Whereas the hosts are represented by their CRISPR cassettes. And they could be also, there's also a string of integers of varying sizes, and they could be duplicate. And the dynamics of the system proceeds via three processes. Viruses degrade with rate D. So when there's a viral degradation, the virus is removed from the population. Hosts divide with the unit rate, which sets the unit of time, basically. And when there's a host division, the daughter cell loses spacers with a per spacer probability L. This happens because it's been shown that for a spacer to be effective against a protospacer, there needs to be a perfect match. So a single mutation in the CRISPR cassette essentially deactivates a spacer. So that's essentially a loss of a spacer. And there's also, in a well-mixed approximation, there's a rate, there's an encounter rate with an encounter probability B between hosts and viruses. And the outcome of encounters is it could be an immune encounter or a productive encounter. An immune encounter happens when the host has a spacer that matches a virus, protospacer, or in the absence of a match with some innate immunity probability S. This S is essential because if S is zero, then all encounters are productive and you cannot pick up spacers. So when when the encounter is immune, when the bacterium survives, the virus is removed from the population, and the bacterium picks up spacers from this virus and inserts it into its CRISPR array with probability A, which is the acquisition probability per protospacer. When the encounter is productive, the bacterium is removed from the population, and the virus produces M virions, burst size M, and in the process, it mutates its protospacers to be able to escape immunity in the future with probability mu per protospacer. So you can see that there are eight parameters in this model, and it's too many to keep track of. So at least we need to, in the end, to figure out what varying all the parameters does. But in this talk, I will fix these five, these reasonable values, and vary only the encounter rate, B, the probability of spacer addition when there's an immune encounter, and the mutation rate, which allows viruses to escape immunity. And the preliminary data is that varying these parameters does not change things qualitatively, only quantitatively. So in the absence of the CRISPR immunity, what you get is a canonical Lotka-Volterra system. Basically, hosts grow, viruses degrade, and these terms have to do with interactions, productive and immune, which is well known that there's a fixed point, and the population sizes of viruses and hosts are inversely proportional to this encounter rate B. So this encounter rate B sets the characteristic population size and therefore characteristic strength of fluctuations. The larger the population size, the smaller fluctuations. This Lotka-Volterra system admits a constant motion, and therefore this fixed point is only marginally stable. In fact, there's this is textbook stuff. there's a family of trajectories around the fixed point, periodic trajectories with a period 2 pi over square root of d in this case, which is about 10 in the parameter I fixed. Another thing to notice is that the population size of hosts diverges when the immunity S reaches a critical value, which is less than 1. It has to do with the burst size of the virus. At this value of immunity, the mean productivity of the virus goes below 1, and there's no longer a fixed point. And where it doesn't matter where you start on the diagram, that the outcome is the extinction of the virus. So, but in a fine population, there are fluctuations, and we want to understand how the fluctuations change the system, and how, of course, the addition of the CRISPR immunity changes the system. So this is without CRISPR immunity, with just fixed innate immunity. Of course, CRISPR has its own dynamics. The CRISPR locus can grow, it can shrink, the proto spacer content of the virus can change, the spacer content of the CRISPR cassette can change. So the natural question that arises, can CRISPR immunity, can adaptive immunity be modeled on a naive level by just a single number, which is the probability of an immune encounter, which will be greater than than innate immunity, but still just on the average probability of an immune encounter. And the answer to that is yes and no. And for some things, it does make sense. For others, it does not. So it's been shown that for a Lotka-Volterra system with fluctuations, with a finite population size, the system, the stochastic extinction, and the mean lifetime of the system scales linearly with the population size. Remember, the population size was inversely proportional to this encounter rate. And when the addition probability is zero, that means there's no CRISPR. And it's indeed would just confirm what other people have found. However, there's when CRISPR is operative, when there's some addition and some mutation rate, initially, for small populations, CRISPR stabilizes the system. So there's much longer coexistence of virus and host in the system. But as the viral population size increases, the CRISPR becomes less effective. And eventually, I think this curve will asymptote to this curve. So that in the limit of infinite population size, for this particular addition rate, the CRISPR becomes ineffective in the large population size limit. Another thing that I want to point out here is when the system becomes extinct, I can record whether the bacteria or the virus become extinct. And without CRISPR, the virus always wins. This is the probability of the virus being cleared or the bacteria winning. Whereas for intermediate values of the spacer addition probability, as I said, CRISPR becomes ineffective for large population sizes. But there exists a critical addition probability. If you add spacers quickly enough, then what happens is that you acquire immunity that becomes strong enough to clear the virus in 100% of the cases. So it's not surprising because there exists a critical immunity even without CRISPR. So if CRISPR is effective enough, the effective immunity provided by CRISPR can reach this value and clear the virus. So I simulate this model using Gillespie. Yeah, these are actual. I have a population of viruses and a population of hosts, and I perform these encounters and I basically go through this program over and over again using Gillespie. Right, so there's a point I want to make here. Because there exists spacer acquisition probability that protects the host completely, you would think that if you allow the host to evolve the acquisition probability, they will evolve to a state where they clear out the virus. And this will be important later. It turns out that this system is really not Lotka-Volterra system. There's lots of richness in the system which we don't understand yet. I'm just going to show you a few examples of the richness that is encountered in this system. What you would expect is if by the assumption of the mean immune counter probability is correct, what you would see is that fluctuations are around the mean here. Whereas in fact, you see for some reasonably large parameter range, you see slow oscillations. So these fast oscillations are Lotka-Volterra oscillations. But on top of this, the fast oscillations, you see slow oscillations in immunity almost an order of magnitude, the length of the CRISPR cassette, the diversity of the viral population, and the host population and the viral population also go through these large slow oscillations with a period of about 30 times Lotka-Volterra period. We don't understand this yet. In another parameter regime, what we see is an excitable medium-like behavior where the system oscillates around a mean, performs small excursions around the mean, and every now and then it performs a very large excursion. This is reminiscent of, say, heart cells or any sort of excitable medium, which is either driven or it can perform stochastic long excursions. And here's this excursion in detail. So the adaptive immunity sits at a very low value. I think we still don't understand what's really happening, but we think that a series of bottlenecks in the host population results in the survival of the hosts that have the longest CRISPR loci. And as a result, the adaptive immunity begins to rise, the CRISPR locus begins to CRISPR locus size rises, and actually it looks like this, the viral diversity is precedes the rise. So we don't understand this yet. So what we'd like to finally to end up with is a reduced description which integrates the fast degrees of freedom out and is left with some slow degrees of freedom that are described by some differential equations, like the Fitzhugh-Nagluma description, if that tells you anything. But from now on, so I showed you this, the system is really rich. And in the rest of the talk, I'm going to ignore this richness. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to average over time. I'm going to produce quasi-steady state properties averaged over a long time. And it turns out that these quasi-steady state properties are quite simple. What I'm plotting here is the adaptive immunity, the probability of having a match between a spacer and a protospacer, here all the dots have all possible parameter values over large broad regions of parameter regimes, and they all collapse into a single master curve. And the master curve is the following. It says the following: since on the horizontal axis I have the number of distinct protospacers in the viral population divided by the mean length of the CRISPR cassette. What this says is that the only thing that matters in predicting adaptive immunity is how many distinct protospacers there are in the population, the viral population, per my spacer if I'm a host. So what it says is that the spacers and the protospacers are distributed at random among the hosts and viruses. So the only thing that matters is how many of them there are and how long my CRISPR is. So if I told you that varying B, mu, and A only moves me up and down this curve, how would changing other parameters move me? This is speculation at this point. And I think none of the other parameters will move me off this master curve except for the number of viral protospacers. So because the protospacers come in a package of NS protospacers, the length of the virus, basically. If the virus is longer, the probability of finding a particular protospacer there is larger. So if I increase the virus size, then this curve should move to the right. So with the same number of distinct protospacers in the viral population and the same CRISPR length, I will have a higher immunity, because all the protospacers are packaged together in the same virus. If the virus length goes to infinity, then every virus has all the protospacers, and I'm immune to all the viruses. We would like to compute the shape of this master curve from first principles, we would like to predict the shape from the parameters of the model, from the basic parameters of the model. And to do that, we need to understand how the number of distinct protospacers and the CRISPR length depend on the parameters of the model. Well, it turns out that the story there is also quite simple. The viral diversity, the number of protospacers in the viral population, is almost the same as if the virus evolved under no selection whatsoever, just a random mutation. It's slightly depressed because there is some negative selection on protospacers that are present in the hosts. But however, the protospacers cannot evolve by themselves. They're packaged together into a package of NS protospacers, and therefore, even if one of them happens to be in all the hosts, you cannot be purged from the system because it's attached to all the other protospacers. Therefore, the selection is quite weak, and the viral diversity is only reduced by 10-15% from its maximum limit under no constraint whatsoever. And this diversity, basically the number of different distinct protospacers in the population, viral population, should be computable analytically. I'm working on this, how to do this. I know how to do it when each virus only has a single protospacer. However, the calculations is much more complicated when there are NS of them, and eventually this will be part of the solution. So the other ingredient in predicting the master curve of adaptive immunity is how the CRISPR locus behaves with parameters of the model. And we can compute it under a certain unrealistic assumption that, as I showed you, it's not realistic, but we're going to make it anyway, that each host has a fixed probability of P of an immune encounter with the virus. If that is the case, then the total length of the CRISPR locus obeys a very simple equation. There's a term, a loss term, due to bacteria host division and loss. And this is an acquisition term, which has to do with the rate of immune encounters. And this is the acquisition rate and the virus size. And in steady state, if you plug in the Lotka-Volterra steady state for the viral population, what you get is a very simple formula that relates the CRISPR locus size in steady state and the fraction of immune interactions. And this is the red curve over here. And you can see that, as expected, it under predicts the CRISPR locus size because there is a positive correlation. The longer the locus, the stronger the immunity, even in the same population. But what I assumed is that in the same population, the locus length is uncorrelated with the immunity. Even though it underpredicts it, it doesn't do so badly. So if you take this prediction and put it together with the calculation of the viral diversity, what this should yield in the end is the prediction for the shape of this master curve, which, since this is a very recent project, I don't have yet. But it will be there. So I would like to circle back now and bring this discussion back to the theme of this conference, and also bring it back to the observation that thermophiles are more likely to have CRISPR. And for that, I need to consider what happens when you have three species, hosts that have CRISPR, viruses, and hosts without CRISPR. And as I said, CRISPR incurs a cost. So CRISPR minus hosts grow faster with a rate 1 plus C, where C is the cost. But CRISPR plus hosts, even though they grow with a rate 1, have a higher immunity, P. So what that means, it turns out in the infinite population, there's frequency-dependent selection that results in a coexistence in the range of costs. But in a stochastic problem, when there's a finite system size, there's stochastic extinction. So what you do in that case is you perform an evolutionary experiment where you introduce a single host into a steady state system of other hosts, and you compute the invasion probability, the fraction of simulations in which this single host overtakes the system. And if the product of the of this invasion probability and the population size is greater than 1, it is said that the invading host is favored by selection, because 1 over n would be the neutral result. If it's completely neutral, then the probability of invasion is 1 over n. And you do the same thing for CRISPR plus introductions. So when you introduce a CRISPR plus host into the population of CRISPR minus hosts, notice that because they're introduced without spacers, initially they always have a lower growth rate. So, it turns out in the end that because they are able to acquire spacers, they in fact can invade. And what happens is um, when the mutation. So now I'm showing the invasion probability of plus hosts, the invasion probability of minus hosts scaled by the population size. So values greater than 1, plus hosts are favored by selection, and values greater than 1, the minus hosts are favored by selection. And you can see that if the mutation rate is low enough, that the plus hosts can invade the minus hosts, the minus hosts cannot invade the plus hosts, as expected, and the mutation rate of the virus is high. The plus host cannot invade, so the virus mutates too quickly. The CRISPR is not effective enough, and the minus hosts can invade when the mutation rate is high, because the CRISPR is not effective enough. And the threshold values for the of the mutation rates for the invasion of plus and the invasion of minus scale with the addition and the population size as expected. There are no surprises there. So now I'm going to summarize and make some speculative statements about what this means for cooperation. So let me just first state what the model does. And it shows complexity way beyond the standard lock of Volterra, like the slow oscillations and excitable medium, which perhaps could be observable in some experimental systems of virus-host coevolution. The steady state, nevertheless, is very simple. If you average the immunity over time, it only depends on the number of spacers in the CRISPR locus and the number of protospacers in the viral population, both of which we could start to address by experimental means. The number of protospacers could perhaps be obtained from metagenomic analysis, and the number of spacers is just trying to figure out the boundaries of the CRISPR locus and the spacers are delineated by the palindromic repeats. So in principle, you could count the number of spacers and compare the empirical values to the prediction. So because the viral diversity is very close to the free evolution limit, and the CRISPR length can be estimated by very simple assumptions, we can put these together into a theory, an approximate theory of this model, and actually predict this shape of the master curve analytically. Then there'll be a complete solution of the model, and the comparison with experiment will be without fitting parameters. Now here's the speculative part. Because CRISPR hosts can resist invasion by more fit CRISPR minus hosts, but to do that they need a viral population. Basically, what I would say is that the CRISPR plus hosts can use the virus as a weapon against the CRISPR minus hosts. And to do that, what they need to do is they need to restrain themselves from not evolving immunity that's large enough that it will wipe out the viruses. The same could be said about the viruses. The viruses shouldn't evolve a mutation rate that's too high that will wipe out the host, but that is true even in a virus-host binary system, because then the host will be extinct as well. So basically, what you can say is that the CRISPR survives via group selection. So if you imagine an experiment where a group of CRISPR plus hosts are repeatedly invaded by CRISPR minus hosts, the one that evolves a mechanism to control immunity is the one that will survive in the end. Another connecting it to the prevalence of CRISPR in thermophiles is dependence of these invasion probabilities on the mutation rate might explain the prevalence in thermophiles, because it is known that mutation fixation rates in high temperatures are lower. So if you see here, when the mutation rates are lower, CRISPR has easier time invading and easier time resisting invasion from CRISPR minus hosts. So if you assume that the virus has a lower mutation rate in high temperatures, then that will make the CRISPR system more effective and therefore CRISPR more prevalent. Thank you very much for your attention.
In there's an idea that in well mixed populations versus spatially structured populations, you might expect a different viral load, particularly because of virus dispersal is limited if you can't move, and people have observed consistency with that. So that soil microbes, typically you try and find viruses, you just don't very easily. Whereas in the ocean, as we saw earlier today, that basically it's just one viral soup. So do you see consistency with that, with respect to the distribution of CRISPR? And that's one. And two would be, so one of the benefits of HGT, horizontal gene transfer for bacteria is when they're in a tritrophic interaction, when they're trying to evade the host immune response. And so you might also expect to see a consequence of that with respect to the costs of CRISPR as well.
Yes. Yes, I think to answer your first question, if the dispersal of the virus is impeded, I think effectively that would just translate into a lower encounter rate. So it would just be a lower population size, which makes CRISPR more effective. The other one, I don't. Yeah, please go ahead. Eukaryotes have other types of immunity, adaptive immunity.
Well, yeah, I know.
Yeah. I don't think so. That's right. If the you got it. If the mutation rate of the virus is high enough, then CRISPR will not be effective at all, because essentially you'll never see the same virus twice. Go ahead.
So this is about your point about the healthy viral population, which is very intriguing. Now, this raises a question about the model. It would seem that it requires a feedback loop, that the CRISPR is more effective if the viral population increases and conversely gets less effective in order to generate sort of a stable viral population.
Well, I didn't
does
say,
your model contain this, or can
no,
it be
no,
modified
it's just extra,
to
extra model. The mechanism for the bacteria, for the host to evolve controls on its immunity is not in the model. I mean, all that is required is that the immunity of the host be in the regime in which there's stable coexistence of viruses and hosts. So, if you didn't have controls, it's advantageous for the host to evolve higher immunity and clear out the viruses. So the selfish host, the cheater, so to speak, would have a higher immunity, would protect itself. But if everybody's a cheater, then the virus is wiped out, and the next Cas minus infection wipes out the Cas plus host. Yeah. Not that I know of. I don't think anybody's done the direct competition experiments where you knock out CRISPR. A virus, yeah. It hasn't been done, no. Well, CRISPR has only been discovered less than 10 years ago. Yes.
So I was wondering, did I hear that there was a statement about antitoxin not occurring in eukaryotic systems? So for sure they do, right? So antitoxin systems for sure do occur in eukaryotes. I'm not sure if I heard that quite right way back here. Okay, that specific one. Yeah, but okay. And so on, also on the, no one, I don't know if anybody's done the CRISPR one, but the toxin, antitoxin system knockout and doing a selection experiment, people have done those. And there was no benefit. So, in bacteria, yeah. That's why they're not published. Huh? Yeah. Well, how do you know what the right environment is always the problem, right? So.
What's going on there? It doesn't work?
Well, it could be that there's a cost associated with CRISPR. So there are conditions under which the CRISPR-less bacteria can invade. It could also be that there are conditions under which CRISPR is ineffective altogether. So when it's ineffective, it would also be lost even without CRISPR minus competition.
So what's the outcome of these models? Is there a CRISPR out there
So I actually had a question. So you mentioned that a cheater in this system would be one that kind of has too good of immunity, right? Wipes out the virus. Now, if you assume that CRISPR is costly and that you could have one that benefits from one that's actually, so you could have one that isn't as good at CRISPR that has a benefit of avoiding some of the cost of CRISPR. So in that case, the cheater would be one with a not as good immune function, in which case the existence of cheaters would actually allow the virus to persist. Then you wouldn't need group selection.
I mean, what I understand is either you have CRISPR or you don't have CRISPR. I can't imagine of an intermediate state where you have some of the benefit and some of the cost. Perhaps. What he's suggesting is a cheater phenotype. Good suggestion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.